Today's News Talk Radio, TNT, with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast.
The world needs a healing. We all need a healing. The healing arts are what we're all about. And my next guest is incredible in this regard. She uses music and her soul and this exorbitant light that she has. And I think she's motivated very much to heal in a way. That's what I get from a lot of what she does. Donna DeLore is a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, arranger, and producer whose artistry spans the world music, devotional, and pop genres. Her voice has graced recordings by Bette Midler, Carly Simon, Leonard Cohen, wow, Leonard Cohen, my favorite, Selena, Belinda Carlisle, and many others. Between 1987 and 2006, DeLore crisscrossed the globe many times as a touring backup vocalist and dancer for Madonna, and now she is here with us, and man, does she sound good playing that harmonium and singing. Donna, welcome to the show. We are honored to have you on. How's it going?
It's going great. It's so great to be here, and it's good timing. My family was, they were just all in here, and my husband took my daughter to the airport to go to college, back to Portland, Oregon, and they just cleared out, and it's all quiet now, so I'm very happy. Yeah.
Great but to is be here it a, is it a sad thing seeing your daughter go off to college?
Or well, is it a happy occasion? You know, she's just finished her, she finished her third year, but she's really not wanting to be in LA that long now. You know, the traffic is a big part of it. She just is really connected with nature there and all the, you know, her community. She loves Portland, so she's doing a internship program over the summer. And I'm always, it's always hard to see her, you know, go, but I know I'll be there. I love Portland too, so it's just a good excuse to go hang out there for a while over the summer. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it there too. I've enjoyed the, what is it, what do you call it? The Northwest. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Great places to play there. Doug Fir, and then of course Seattle's a hop, skip, and a jump. But when she leaves now, have you found that music is becoming sort of re-energized? I mean, is the empty space of having your daughter leave mean you have more room in your life to explore music again? Does music ebb and flow in your life?
It does. And I still have a 15-year-old at home. So,
oh, okay.
There's still those challenges. And we spoke about this briefly before, just balancing everything. I found that before I had children, I had so much inspiration and time on my hands to write songs. Mm-hmm. And it was always about like my relationships and, you know, just my views on everything in life. But then I felt like they took up so much space in my psyche, of course, you know, and that love and that devotion, you know, that went to them so much. But I remember one time when I was singing some vocals and I was holding my daughter who just left as a baby, and she sensed me while I was singing. I was singing to something else, you know, I wasn't devoted to her in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I was just in the music, and she got really upset by it.
Oh yeah.
Because isn't that interesting? So there it is.
I can
they
totally
want you
relate
on
to
them 100% of the time. And even though, yep, I was holding her, that she felt I was devoted to something else.
Oh, yeah.
That was threatening, right? So,
absolutely.
Now,
I had that same experience with my daughter. I was thinking, I'm the cool dad. I'm going to sing her songs, and she's just going to love it, and she's going to feel it. It's like the total opposite. She's like, stop. No. Like,
it's crazy. My daughters, like, when we're singing happy birthday to someone over the phone, they got mad at me because I was too good of a singer, and they were like intimidated. They wouldn't sing with me. They're like, it's no fair. You're too good. So I'd have to be like, I'd have to not sound good purposely. I'd have to kind of sing out of tune. So they were happy. So they would sing. Yeah. It's so funny, but that's cute.
Kids.
That's a cute thing.
They make
thing.
The world go round.
But they've been, you know, they've just been such big part of my music. Like a lot of my albums, I have them in there, you know, like my daughter would come up to the mic and I'd have her say something or whatever, and I put that in to the recording, and people who've heard the music, they always come up and comment, I remember that at the end of that song when your daughter came up. And I don't know, it's just nice. You know, that's going to happen with you. It's telling the story of your life, you know, and having them involved, I think, is so important. I brought Sophia, my older daughter, out on tour when she was 1 and 3, on 2 world tours. And I got, like, my niece was the nanny, you know, and I wanted to be out in the world with her. And I wanted her to be that kind of a person who just felt comfortable, you know, around a lot of different people. And she is that way. She's a woman of the world now.
That's amazing. Yeah. You were telling me that when you were touring with Madonna, she was cool with you bringing your child and providing, like, you know, childcare and all that kind of stuff. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it is. I had to, bring, you know, somebody out. So the first tour, it was mainly my niece. And then the second tour, I would have friends, I'd call them and send them the tour schedule and say, okay, everyone, you each pick 2 weeks and you can come out, but you have to take care of Sophia when I'm not with her, you know, when I'm on stage, and you just have to help me. So I'd get an adjoining room and they would be over there. And then it was crazy. Like, I'd get back at, like, midnight and then do the bath routine, put her to bed. But it was amazing that I got that support, you know, and they'd have, like, toys that they bring to my dressing room, like games and toys. You know, those people, those tours are so huge, and you're really well taken care of. So I really appreciated that. Madonna would, you know, of course, she knew how challenging it was having, like, your family out with you and everything, but I appreciated that support. Yeah, it was really amazing.
Yeah, it's weird. I just came back from doing 2 dates, one in Bisbee and one in Tucson. And so I wasn't present with my daughter then. And then I have this European little 11-day run coming up. And I'm really anxious about that regarding her. Because, you know, and I'm trying to explain to her that I have to go on the road. And she doesn't really understand. And it just, you can sense that there's that she maybe takes it personally or something. And it's just like, there's really nothing you can necessarily do about that. You just have to sort of explain it. And then I have to, within my own guilt feelings, understand, well, I have to provide, you know, so this is what I do. And also, I have to still live my purpose, because that's going to be a good example to her as well. I can't, like, you have to sacrifice a lot of your life towards your children, and hopefully you do that happily. I do. I'm an older cat having a kid for the first time, so I got to have all that, like, just me as the tortured artist guy forever. And that got so old. So I'm quite happy to just, like live for somebody else in a way, you know?
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, they are so in the moment, honestly, no matter what kind of fit or what they, as you're walking out the door, you know, what they're expressing to you, the minute you're gone, they're playing with somebody. And they're,
right.
And, you know what I mean? They're so in
That's
the moment.
True.
It's really our guilt. It's our
You're
guilt.
Right. Thank you.
And
you're exactly right.
And being out there, I mean, it just continues to be a balancing act, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, I feel like they really respect me. They respect that I have a passion. And
right.
They see, I'm sure they check out, like, my posts and everything on Instagram. They very rarely comment. In fact, Lucy, the 15-year-old, never comments. It's just not cool. And she's into, like, her music. I always hear her, like, coming out of her earbuds, like, in the car. I mean, she's got her own scene going on, which I love, you know, that she has her own thing. But Sophia once in a while will comment on something if it's really personal. Like, I'll put up a collage with pictures with my mom or something, a song I wrote about my mom. It's sweet. But they're supportive. I think you just know that they're going to be aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you a happier person. And that's what you want, you know?
That's right.
And you could always sing the song, Daddy Always Comes Back, Yes He Does. Daddy Always Comes Back, Yes He Does. Daddy Always Comes Back. Yeah.
definitely going to always come back. She is the love of my life. I love her so much. So
isn't it incredible? I'm so happy, you know, following you and watching you in your life and not knowing you yet. I was so happy for you that you're having this experience. Really. Yay.
Yeah. It's I heard some, and I don't remember where, but somebody said God does something really sort of decent in not letting know people who don't have kids what they're missing out on or something like that. And that really registered with me, because once you have a kid, and not to be that guy that like everybody has to have kids or whatever, but it just alters the structure of your life so profoundly that it's really hard to imagine not having a kid at that point. So there is like this like Rubicon you cross or something. And if you don't have kids, you don't know that, because you just don't. And it seems like, and you see parents like struggling with the kids, and kids, you know, it is a sacrifice. It is difficult. There are annoying bits about it, obviously. But I think most people would never trade it, you know?
No, and it's the work. I mean, day to day, you're constantly having to check yourself on being present with them, you know? And like, what kind of an example are you being in the moment? That's what's so great. But you could, you know, what's so amazing to like, there's a drum behind me. I remember when my second daughter was little, we would just sit there and play the drum. And she loved it. Like, we just spend that time together, you know, and bring music in with them, because our passion and our love for it, we could share that with them. I wanted to have, of course, you know, kids that played music with me, but neither one of them are going to do that. But just to be around it is so important.
Yeah, I was listening to Jerry Seinfeld interviews recently, and he was talking about, it's, you know, people talk about quality time with your kids, and he goes, what I love is the crappy time, just the wasted time with the kids, just like like sharing cereal with them or just being with them and stuff like that.
The mundane, what appears to be mundane, but then year after year after year, I don't know, even now I'm driving my daughter like 40 minutes to school and back, and I just drive all the time. I was telling you that before, like in the car 2 hours a day. And no matter how much I walk and do yoga, I'm just like, I'm getting stiff from all this driving. But I'll miss that. And enough time has gone by now that I realize anything like that, I have to just say to myself, I'm going to miss this. I'm going to miss being in the car with her every day, you know? Yep. So it's all really
well, listen, I mean, let's talk a little bit about music and what music means to you. I mean, I was, you sent me some stuff about your heritage, and I didn't realize that your grandfather and your dad were like really sort of high level musicians and session cats that worked with incredible people. Talk about growing up in that vicinity.
Wow. Well, I grew up in recording studios, like literally falling asleep under consoles. You know, when my dad was having his sessions, my parents were divorced when I was 4. So I'd be with my dad on the weekends, and it was always like super fun times. And I would go to backstage concerts with him. I remember one time at the Universal Amphitheater outside, it was Paul Williams' concert. My dad was conducting
Paul Williams,
I love
Paul Williams. He helped he my life out when I was going through some really hard times. Yeah.
That's so sweet. And my dad, so he was originally a Wrecking Crew member, you know, with Phil Spector.
That's incredible.
He was one of those session guys. So he played on
insane.
He's a rebel and he never, you know, whatever the words are. And the Phil Spector's Christmas album. So I grew up hearing those records, and I grew up listening to those female voices. Be my little baby. And I always remember like, I want to sing like that. I want to have that tone, you know? And then my dad worked on like Pet Sounds and played all the dee, 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 like all this stuff. And those were the records, like, in our hallway, we had a little shelf, and there was vinyl, not much, but every one in there were records of my dad's that he had worked on. And then he produced Glenn Campbell, you know, Wichita Lineman by the time we get to Phoenix,
oh,
and
my,
all that stuff, and did those
insane
string arrangements.
That's the greatest song ever.
I know. I recently went to see Jimmy Webb. I'd never met him, but I've grown up with these stories about Jimmy Webb and my dad going to meet with him and finding the songs and everything. And I went, it was at Catalina's Bar and Grill in Hollywood. And right before he played, I went into his dressing room and he was just saying amazing things about my dad and how sophisticated he was musically, because really, like, in that country scene, you know, my dad was an LA kid and grew up with his father was an upright bass player with Warner Brothers Orchestra. So he was on contract for like 30 years. They would get up every day and go play on, you know, soundtracks like Gone with the Wind and Casablanca and everything. And he was, they just, my, you know, they grew up in that whole scene. My grandfather was like opera, wanted to be an opera singer, but he was, his parents were, his dad was French. His dad was a French music professor. And he had to go, and he would have had to serve in the military, I guess, if he went to France to study opera. So he came back home and then became a session musician and everything. But yeah, it's a long story. My grandfather did run away from home when he was 15 to join the vaudeville show. And he was like train hopping and everything. So I grew up with all these stories and how my Nana met my granddaddy when he was in that vaudeville show, and she was like the young girl in the front row with her cute little polka dot dress, and he like made the eyes at her from the stage. Isn't that funny? And
then
she
incredible.
Always she would like sing the songs that he sang to her. Yeah. It was so cute. So like, oh, it's all so romantic and everything. My dad had, you know, it was great stories, but also stories that weren't so great, you know, about he felt, you know, his attitude towards the music business, how they, you know, at a certain point he had felt like some management and lawyers and stuff had not really done him right, and he didn't get his royalties and this and that. So all these kinds of stories I grew up with. Going into the business, we moved to Nashville when I was 16. So my mom died. I was living with her, but she died of breast cancer. And so I went to live with my dad. Thanks. And then we just like took on Nashville. It was so much fun because I was like the LA kid in Nashville, and there were writers' houses. Did you go there like years ago? I don't know. Like if you went there,
had a good,
like
I mean,
that?
I never had the Nashville experience in my music career yet. Hopefully I get to experience that. I got the LA and I got the New York and I got the England covered, but Nashville, it's gone missing for me so far.
Nashville was so much fun because my dad, like everyone was like, Al DeLore, oh my God, like bowing to him and everything. And really we had to leave LA because he wasn't getting jobs in LA. But he was getting the jobs in Nashville, but he was like music business royalty there. So I just became friends with all the publishers and the writers. So I would walk on Music Row from house to house and just hang out with songwriters. And I was there when they wrote Wind Beneath My Wings. And here I am like this. I would do my demos, the demos for my dad, his demo singer and everything when I was 15, 16. And I would want them to like, let me sing that song. You know, they're like, oh, no, sweetie. You know, this is going to Gladys Knight and this is going to, you know, whoever. But just even when I was finishing high school there, I would leave at like 12 o'clock and just go hang out with music people. So I loved being around that community. And
Donna,
it was really sweet. I got a job at a rock and roll hotel. It was great.
Listen, there's so much to cover with you.
Oh, there's
Like this needs to go on for a 4-hour thing, and where I already got to take a break, and I got to hear you sing right after these words. Let me take
a
quick break. We'll be right back with Donna DeLore right after these words on TNT.
Woo!
TNT's James Freeman.
Nelson Mandela said, "To be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others." The truth is, too many people have taken their eyes off the ball over the past 50 years. Too many good people have lived in the hope that electing members of parliament to take care of things for us every 5 years will keep things on the straight and narrow. The result of this is that we have allowed too much power to be concentrated in the hands of too few. you.
James Freeman on today's News Talk TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back with Donna DeLore. So, Donna, will you sing a song for us?
Yes, I would love to. And I have my harmonium right here.
Perfect. So
this is an instrument. Okay, I was at a party years and years ago, and someone gave me a harmonium, and I didn't know how to play it. I didn't know what it was. I took it home, and it took me all weekend to figure out how to play it. So then I start playing my songs and all my pop songs on the harmonium, and then my music really changed, became more meditative. And here's an example of that.
Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving I'll be a living sanctuary for you. Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary so pure and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving I'll be a living, forgiving sanctuary for you. I'll be a sanctuary, a sanctuary, a sanctuary. Lord, prepare me for you.
I'm transported. That is so beautiful.
Oh, thanks. Is your pulse a little slower now?
I don't know. You put me in a whole new realm. I can't even talk. So this interview's over now. I just have to meditate and zen out.
Right?
But the word sanctuary, and it feels like you're singing to God. And then you said my favorite mantra and thank you. And it's funny because I have a new song called Thank You Is My Mantra. I'll send it to you. Yeah. And you also said when you shifted to the harmonium, then your music became more meditative. I'm wondering if also that means more spiritual. And I'm wondering, are you singing to God? Is this a form of worship to you? Are you trying to give healing light to people? What's this? What's sort of behind this soulful sound you're creating?
Well, it's, you know, everyone has their own personal connection, you know, and I always felt music. A lot of this had to do with my connection with my father, too. That was the way he connected with the divine, you know, and I shared that with him. And for some reason, and I always had hints of that in my songs. I felt like my music was spiritual, and I think music is spiritual in its nature because it's just a heart opening, and it's just coming from your heart. And it's just an incredible thing when you hear someone sing, you feel their heart, you feel their soul. But when I got the harmonium, I just went more inward, and it made me more clear about these things that I always wanted to sing about. And it's beyond words, you know? It's a feeling. It's something that I sense, and I've sensed it all my life. That's why I started, you know, in yoga class, I started learning mantras, and I was singing, you know, Om Shanti Shanti, peace, and which are like sound vibration formulas. And it was just something that's transcendent. And when I started singing this music, I even started having experiences of witnessing myself singing where I wasn't. Have you had that? Like when you're singing, it's just like your voice is just floating all over and you're not really controlling it anymore. It's just going.
Yeah.
You lose yourself in the music. Mm-hmm. So I like the meditative music is just it's more like finding the silence for myself and losing myself. And it's like connecting with the divine in the way that I can connect in the most pure way. And
like an inroad into presence.
Yeah. 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 And it's amazing. You know, when I played at a retreat last weekend. I was sitting in the grass. It was in Malibu, this beautiful day retreat, wellness retreat. And the birds were singing, and there was even like a lawnmower going, you know, in the next yard. But for some reason, like when I'm playing this instrument and I'm singing, it opens me up to the, you know, more to nature. So I'm creating sound, but it's actually opening me up to hearing and harmonizing with nature and to hearing the silence, even though I'm creating sound. I don't know. I've had that experience like in playing at yoga classes as well. And it's just such a, I don't know, it's just putting you in the moment. And it's such a place of stillness. I mean, I also get up on stage and rock out with band, and it's a whole different part of me because I'm a dancer and I love to dance with people and have fun. And I love singing with people, you know, and that back and forth.
Do you also resonate with more aggressive music, like punk rock music and stuff like that?
I did. You know, when I was a teenager, I would like go out to the clubs. As soon as I started driving, I'd go to the new wave clubs, you know, like in Chatsworth, in the Valley, San Fernando Valley, and loved that music and all the records that came on. And then when we moved to Nashville, I didn't really have anywhere to go, so I went to the dance clubs. And I was always into dancing too, so I love beats. I love rhythm. I know you do too. Just finding the right groove for a song and being. I mean, so much of what I do is like moving and dancing and movement as well. And that's another form of devotion, you know. So it's just I feel like those are the gifts that I was given, and I just want to use them the best way that I can.
I want to ask you about somebody who's that's on your bio, that Leonard Cohen, because he is such a strong spiritual relationship with music mm-hmm. and language as well. Like, it's the sort of the blending of words and melodies, and it all feels devotional in some kind of way. What was it like working with him?
Well, I was in... This was the second to last record that he made, and Patrick Leonard, he's the one who introduced me to Madonna in 87. So I've had this relationship with him as a producer, and he called me in, and unfortunately, Leonard didn't show up at the session. Like, I did many sessions for that, for a second to last album. And what was amazing is that I was singing, like, everything with Leonard, like, with his voice. So... It blew my mind because none of these songs, no one's ever heard them. And some of the words weren't even finalized, but we were like workshopping the songs. And he put the words in front of me and I would sing every line. And he tried different melodies and he called me back the next day. Oh, Leonard wants a different melody on this. Can you sing it again? And the songs, I mean, I wanted to so bad to like take those words home with me. They were incredible. As he is. I mean, what a beautiful man, you know. I would have loved to work with him on stage, you know. But just being on those recordings was really powerful. I love the one that goes, I always like it slow, I never take it like it fast. Do you know that one? It's called Slow.
Not off the top of my head.
No?
No.
I just related so much to the words, of course. And one of the songs... Pat was telling me that he's been working on the lyric for like 30 years and he finally was finishing it. Isn't that great?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, yeah. Well, he's the one that he had the punk rock counter to first thought, best thought was always like the, you know, the conventional wisdom was first thought, best thought. And then I think he came out and said second thought, best thought, which is pretty funny and amazing. And it's interesting because when you compare sort of him with Bob Dylan, and Bob Dylan, we sort of get the idea that he would toss off these songs in like 15 minutes and they would be like Visions of Johanna, you know, or something like this. And then Leonard Cohen was exactly the opposite. It would be like working on something for 5-6 years, or like you said, even more. I mean, what about you in your own process? Do you think of it more first thought? Are you first thought, best thought, or second thought, best thought?
Every song is different, you know. I was going through like severe, pretty crazy health challenges like 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago, and I couldn't like go in the studio and write the music or anything. So this guitar player who I've known forever, James Hera, we were doing this record together. He would send me the songs, and I would listen to the track, and I'd be like, okay, I'd have to write the melody and lyric. Well, sometimes I would just hear the whole song right away. The first time listening to it, I would know the lyric, I would know the melody, the whole thing. And then other songs, you know, they just take longer. They take longer to get inside. Like, what is this about? I have to really deeply emotionally connect with something. And it's usually, it has to pretty much be about an experience in my life. So that whole album we made about my own healing journey, and it was kind of like my higher self talking to me, saying, you're going to get through this, you have to keep dreaming and everything. That was one example. But other times, I mean, I know you're this way, like sometimes you just sit down and a different instrument will bring out a different kind of song. So maybe some songs I wrote on the guitar that was different than the whirly, or I feel every instrument kind of has a spirit too, and it kind of...
True.
Right? You sit down at it, and when I started playing the harmonium, that brought out certain songs.
How did you heal yourself when you said you went through this health crisis? What are some of the things you did? Did you get into sort of positive thinking, visualization? Did you use music, prayer? How did you go about doing it?
Wow, a lot of prayer. I just spent so much time with myself going to that place and knowing that everything was good. And it's all about love, you know, feeling how much love is around you. And I didn't like go public with my diagnosis or anything. You know, I just wanted my dear friends and family to be praying for me, you know, and I didn't want to have to report to everyone what was going on.
Right.
It was my story to tell and to day by day get through. I did like so many alternative treatments, and every time I did, I would be listening to my body, mind, and spirit are healthy, are healthy. Just really positive affirmations. Even wow. like, you know, on this new record, I have this piece that says, every cell in my body is healthy. Every cell in my body is free. Returning to perfect peace. You know, returning to ease. So finding ease, because like dis-ease, you are not at ease, you know, and finding that place of ease, whatever practices you can do. I'm really into the sauna, you know, going in and like sweating my prayers in the sauna. That's really deep for me. Mm-hmm. And putting on the music that can take me really deep and being surrounded by just super positive people and
letting go of anger and working on forgiveness is huge.
Okay.
Just not
having that's number one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. I recently was like, I had this dream that I was over an audience and I was hanging from some kind of like aerial kind of silk thing, but my heart was up to the ceiling and I was singing this, I want to know what it is to be free. And then this answer is forgiveness, forgiveness.
That's it.
I want to let go of what's been holding me. It's forgiveness, forgiveness. You know, it's simple and it's so hard.
Yeah.
So, wow. Every day, such a practice. What can I let go of?
Let me take a quick break. We can meditate on forgiveness. And we'll be back with Donna right after these words on TNT.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything, with innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you'll never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I have a feeling these are the suspects in question. Two occupants look like the people involved in the armed robbery. I'm approaching the vehicle. Request backup. The driver matches the description because of a wide-set nose.
Even the mighty might not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. But you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Donna DeLore, we're talking about all kinds of stuff, music and the healing. I mean, I feel like you're a master at healing music. Maybe that's just your spirit coming through.
Yeah.
But I've also heard, like, I know some friends who make, music that's kind of healing centered, and they're telling me, oh, it's blowing up on TikTok, it's becoming quite huge. Have you experienced any of that, or do you put stuff out on TikTok and healing stuff, and is there an industry blooming around this kind of music?
You know, I think people want to feel good, and they want to get well, and they want to calm down. And the more stress we have in our lives, we need more tools. So, you know, people going and taking classes, whether it's breath work or just going to meditate in a room with other people, is powerful. I feel like more and more people need it in their lives, and they're recognizing that, you know. I mean, cancer rates are going up. We all know... we all need to just be healthier and increase our awareness of all these things that are good for us. I want to, I love when people come up to me and say, you helped me through this hard time. You know, whether it's someone who lost their son in a car accident and they're like, I just listened to your music for a year straight and it helped me find that place of peace, or someone's getting through a health challenge. That's the most, and you know that, like, it shows when people come up to you. Mm-hmm. The most satisfying as an artist is when you hear those stories and how much your music means to them. It's not about your celebrity, you know. It's about the music. And in your heart, in your intention of making this music.
Yeah. You know?
So I'm going to go more. I think that's just where I'm at. I'm not trying to, like, contrive myself to be part of something that's blowing up. But I'm not yet on TikTok, which is crazy. Maybe you can teach me how. But
I have a strange
I'm just trying to keep up with Instagram.
With yeah. I'll post a TikTok every now and again, Joe and then Nagle. I'll forget, you know. But anyway, play us another song.
Well, I know, but
some,
we'll go.
We got to hear some more music.
Okay, so this song was actually my first single. I was signed to a company called MCA Universal, 1992. I think this came out. It was my first single. And I'm still singing it. And it's called Praying for Love.
All right.
I'm praying for love to take my tears, to take my fears, and throw them all away. Praying for love on this holy night. If we look real hard, I know we'll see the light. Praying for love. Praying for love, praying for love, praying for love. Everybody needs a hand to hold, to keep them warm at night, to take away the cold. Everybody needs a goodnight kiss. It's the one great thing we can't resist. Oh, 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 oh. I'm singing, I'm celebrating. Oh, 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 oh. I'll be right here praying. I'm praying for to get here soon. Take me in its arms under a yellow moon. Praying for love to bring me wings and to let me fly up where the angels sing. Praying for love. Praying for love, praying for love, praying for love. While the world is spinning on its side, we can stay right here and keep our dreams alive. Take the time to hear the beating of the drums. Hear the voice that's calling out for everyone. Oh, oh, oh. I'm singing, I'm celebrating. I'm still right here, 'cause I'm praying, praying for love to hear my cry and to touch my heart before we say goodbye. Praying for love to bring me wings and to let me fly up where the angels sing. Praying for love, praying for love, praying for love, praying for love. Can you hear me now? I'm praying for love, praying for love, praying for love, to heal me when I cry. To touch my heart before we say goodbye.
Praying for love, beautiful, beautiful
song. Thank you. So there's,
oh, go ahead.
I was going to say there's a pop song on a harmonium.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was about to bring up, because what's interesting, and you can kind of really, it brings it up in that particular song, is the funny thing about the harmonium is there's no rhythmic information. It's a droning instrument. It's like,
I know.
There's zero rhythm in it. It's almost like the source of its power, strangely. That limitation, I think, it invites you into a certain sort of spiritual context, I guess. But in that song, I mean, then the rhythm is completely handled by the vocals. And then you have that little praying for love, which is, you know, you can kind of almost hear a pop song at that point. What do you think to that whole idea that the harmonium has that strange limitation? There's no rhythmic information. I mean, if I'm playing acoustic guitar, there's tons of rhythm in that, or a piano.
And I love that. Like I would, I'm playing at the Beatrice Woods Art Center next Sunday. Beatrice Woods is an incredible ceramicist and everything. We're playing with tabla, percussion, like cajon and tabla, and then acoustic guitar. And then I'll be playing this. So, you know, I love to just get up and dance and do my thing. So having that rhythm there is incredible. But it's also really fun to just be me, you know, where I can just take my voice wherever I want. I don't have to worry about arrangement with everyone going to the bridge and everything. And I know you do. You play solo a lot. I can play a little guitar, but
What I'm saying about the harmonium is it invites you into the, because there is no rhythmic information, you have to sort of gather strength in other elements of it. So it almost invites this sort of spiritual sound in some way.
Absolutely. It really does. And I love, like, just that low drone is just, there's certain sweet spots on the instrument too.
Right.
You know, I love to just explore that when I can do something by myself and just improvise.
With the song like Praying for Love, it makes me think about love and how, like, it's something that, like, we have to pray for, and yet our nature is love. Why do you think people have such a hard time opening up to love? And what are some of the ways you allow love to resonate in you?
Right when you said that, I just thought, you know, older I've gotten and what I've been through, I feel like you have a choice. You could choose fear or you could choose love. And I think by being, just immersing yourself in that feeling, like we have children and we get to know that feeling and feel that, I feel so blessed. I mean, I'm so blessed for the life I've created, you know? And first of all, being born with gifts and being able to share, you know, and having this dream, always having it since I was a kid, I was so clear. I feel so blessed. I know a lot of people, it's a challenge to let go of that fear and just feel blessed and feel how much love and how much they really have, you know, that gratitude. And sometimes it takes a life-threatening situation to wake you up to feeling that way. And some people are just in situations where it's so hard psychologically, they just can't get to that place. And I have so much compassion for that, you know? So there's, you know, there's all kinds of things, and music is a tool as well that people can use to get them to that ease and that peaceful place, and to realize, you know, just simple things in life that you love, and just, you know, just feel that deeply.
You were talking about your health scare, your health crisis. What overcoming that, what gifts did you get from that? What did you learn about life that you didn't know before having gone through that?
Well, the first thing is, like, my mom, you know, passed when I was young, and I got on this whole health path right after she passed, right? And so all my life growing up, the older I would get, like, I was so afraid it was going to happen to me. But that was very subconscious, you know? So I think that when it did end up happening to me, it was really facing my fears. And I just got more confident with taking charge of my health, positive thinking. I mean, just so many. Just that being able to get up every morning and just be like, my nana used to say, look at this beautiful day God has put on our doorstep. Let's rejoice and be glad we're in it. It's just like, let's just be glad we're in this life right now. It's just ultimate celebration. I mean, every time I play on stage, I'm just like jumping up and down, like, woo, I'm alive. You know, thank you, God. Just so grateful. And just everything is so much more precious. And also, you just don't sweat the little things. You know, it's big picture. And then if you have any relationship, it's magnified if there's any negativity with a relationship. Right. You feel it in your body. You have this barometer. And it's like, it, you know, went into the red. Can't be around this. You know, I feel like I take way more time to take care of myself. And self-care is huge. We were kind of talking about that, I think, in our initial conversation. You know, you were saying, like, I'm spending so much time on self-care. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Because you really can give more to the world if you do that. You know, it's longevity and sustainability. I think it's so important. And you have so much to give. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I'm going to go to the cold plunge and the sauna right after this interview. I can't wait. I'm going to just do some meditation and think about a lot of what we've been talking about. What do you think happens when we die? Do you have any sort of belief system in that regard?
You know, from experiences of being around many people that have passed, I feel like I was holding my dad in my arms when he passed, you know, and I spent like all day with him in the room and feeling his spirit. And I just felt him. One thing is, I felt him coming through me. There was this, like, I have a line in my song, Piano Man, with my hands, you'll keep playing. And my dad, like, I started, like, my dad was really into Latin music. So I started like learning all his riffs and everything that I could play. And I'd be like a hummingbird. Recently, a dear friend of mine, David Newman, just passed. This hummingbird came right in front of my face. Like, I love hummingbirds. I've always been connected to them. But this one was circling around me and came up right in front of me. I thought it was going to, like, poke me in the forehead, you know? Like, what are you doing? So you just feel it all around you. You feel that energy and that spirit. And that's comforting.
Donna, tell everyone where to find you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you, Joseph. DonnaDelore.com. That's my website. And I'm on Instagram.
DonnaDelore.com. Find her on Instagram. I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's...
You got to go. You know, this is super
cool. You got to go. This is the radio. Thank you for coming on. We got to have you back.
Oh, my gosh. I really... Yeah, I look forward to connecting with you soon.
Let's write a song together. Yes. All right, everybody, keep listening to TNT and have an amazing weekend. We'll see you. Bye-bye.